Sentire Media.
Hello, you. You're listening to A History of Italy, a Sentire Media podcast. Special episode on great women in Italian history, Lucrezia Borgia. Non posso più accucciarmi e così ritorno su. Lascio i colli nelle valli tra due salici piangenti. Io ritrovo la speranza di un amore che ormai fu. This is a special episode to celebrate a History of Italy podcast becoming part of the Sentire Media Network. At Sentire Media, we've made it our mission to craft podcasts that ignite your passions, keep you informed and entertained, and deliver insights to those who have a deep love for the Italian way of life. Go to sentire.media for more information. In this special episode, we're going to have a look at one of the most notorious, at least up until a certain point in history, women of the Italian Renaissance, Lucrezia Borgia. The 13-year-old girl sat, soaking in the sumptuous view around her, her golden curls done up in the latest, late 15th century style, her blue eyes sparkling with an intelligence and liveliness that would stay with her all of her life, noted by many over the years. Much of Roman high society was there, but not only. There was nobility and ambassadors from all over Italy and Europe. The jewels, clothes, finishings, and furnishings amounted to thousands of ducats. Everyone was here for a wedding. Despite her young age, it was her wedding. However, although she would have attracted the gazes of many of the guests, she was perhaps not the most notable person in the great hall. First of all, there was her older brother, the famously handsome Giovanni I, who wore a fortune in clothes and jewels that far outshined the poor groom, Giovanni Sforza, Count of Pesaro. To try and compete with the show of wealth of the family he was marrying into, he had had to borrow a golden necklace from the Duke of Mantua. Unfortunately for him, the ambassador of the Duke attended the wedding and noticed the necklace, making sure he later spread the little bit of gossip. Just like one would do nowadays when on a red carpet they would see a famous person wearing that same dress they'd already worn. The father of the bride was there with his personal secretary, Giovanni Bucard, who a bit snootily noted that many ladies were not paying homage to his employer. In their defense, perhaps said ladies were not used to attending weddings in which the father of the bride was the spiritual leader of all of Christendom, the Pope. In particular, Pope Alexander VI, Rodrigo Borgia, who was presiding over the wedding of his beloved daughter, Lucrezia. Beloved she may have been, but that did not stop Pope Borgia from using his daughter as a pawn in his attempt at securing power and a dynasty for his family. That was what was going on here. But let's go back a bit and get to know the girl a bit better. During her life and for centuries after her death, she was followed by a reputation as a femme fatale, a sexual predator and murderer who wore a poisoned ring and was an active player in the Machiavellian political machinations of her father and brother, Cesare. Indeed, speaking of Machiavelli, Cesare Borgia was one of the main case studies in the Florentine writer's famous treatise on acquiring and holding on to power, The Prince. Then, starting in the early 20th century, Lucrezia's reputation was turned around and went perhaps too far in the opposite direction, becoming an innocent and helpless pawn in the dynastic strategy of the men of her family. Although this may have been true with a very young Lucrezia, who basically had no real say in the part she was assigned to play, it is definitely not the case for the young woman who became the beloved Duchess of Ferrara, a capable administrator and shrewd businesswoman. Lucrezia Borgia was born in 1480 at Subiaco, east of Rome, and by the way, highly worth a visit, with its impressive Benedictine abbey, which seems to have been naturally generated from the mountainside. She was born to then Cardinal Rodrigo Borgia and his favourite lover, Giovanna Cattanei, known as Vannozza. The mother was not of noble extraction, and it may have been from her that Lucrezia got a good head for business. Indeed, Vannozza invested some of the riches her wealthy lover the Cardinal showered upon her to invest in a locanda, an inn, which was called La Vacca, the cow. You can now actually visit the location to this day, just off Campo dei Fiori in Rome, on the corner between Via dei Cappellari and Vicolo del Gallo. The place today is known as the Locanda del Gallo, the Rooster Inn. Not sure how the transformation from the cow to the rooster came about. Lucrezia was taken from her mother's home at a young age and sent to live with a cousin of her father's, a noblewoman by the name of Adriana de Mila. While her father was still cardinal, it seemed that Lucrezia's destiny would be to secure the family's ties with their homeland, Spain, by being married off to a Spanish nobleman, Gaspare da Procida. However, when Cardinal Borgia became Pope, it seemed more useful for Lucrezia to be used in creating dynastic ties on the Italian peninsula, and in particular with the powerful Sforza family of Milan. The union with the Sforza family may also have been in part to settle a debt of gratitude towards another member of the family, Cardinal Ascanio Sforza, who had been in the running for Pope, but then had decided to back Borgia. Legend would have it, thanks to 4 mules laden with silver, although the promises of offices and privileges would probably have been enough. The Sforza were by now Dukes of Milan, although the man chosen for the marriage match was actually the Count of Pesaro, Giovanni Sforza. Pesaro is quite far from Milan, around 360 kilometers, in the current-day region of Le Marche. One very important detail was that the marriage was not immediately consummated with witnesses, as was the practice, citing the bride's young age, something which would play an important part later. The actual wedding with the bride and groom present was in June of 1493, although officially the couple were already married, as it had been done by proxy in February, a rather common practice to make sure nothing happened in the meantime, like one of the two dying, for example. Nothing gets in the way of you being united in holy matrimony like your own death. Soon, however, the political marriage to Giovanni Sforza became a lot less convenient, and Pope Alexander VI wanted Lucrezia free for another one. He wished to move closer to an alliance with the Kingdom of Naples, having also supported the claim of the current ruling dynasty of Aragonese origin over that of the new French king, Charles VIII. The only problem was that Giovanni Sforza, the husband, wasn't really keen on the idea of just stepping aside. It seems that the very straightforward and practical solution of murder was floated and may have reached Giovanni's ears, possibly warned by Lucrezia herself. Then the Pope came up with another idea. Why didn't Giovanni publicly declare that he was impotent so they could annul the marriage? Easy peasy. In the end, Sforza decided that losing his reputation was less important to him than losing his life, and accepted to sign a document declaring that he indeed could not get the little Giovanni to do his job, and the marriage had not been consummated. It is ironic that Sforza, in his late 20s, had already had illegitimate children by this time, and would have children up to the year of his death in 1510, so either he got better, or never actually had the problem in the first place. In retaliation for his hurt pride, it seems that Sforza started a rumour that the Pope had wanted to keep Lucrezia for himself and for his son, Cesare, starting the rumours of incest that would put a long-term stain on Lucrezia's reputation. Lucrezia, in any case, was now free for a new marriage alliance. She was officially freed and declared a virgin in front of a committee on the 22nd of December, 1497. Another legend would have it that this committee very accommodatingly allowed her to wear a free-fitting dress to hide the fact that she was 6 months pregnant with the son of Pedro Calderón, known as Perotto, a personal secretary of the Pope. Another version states that if there was a child, it was actually the illegitimate son of Lucrezia's brother, Cesare, whom she took care of. There was indeed a mysterious infans romanus, Roman infant, one of the mysteries surrounding the Borgias. The boy was called Giovanni and went on to have a decent career in the papal court. Whoever his mother and father had been, he gave his daughter the name Lucrezia, perhaps showing that he at least believed that the more famous Lucrezia had indeed been his mother. The year of the annulment, 1497, brought tragic news for Lucrezia. The body of one of her beloved brothers, Giovanni, washed up on the banks of the Tiber River, filled with stab wounds. All of his money and expensive clothes still with him, proving that it had been an assassination and not a robbery gone badly. He had had many enemies, so the list of potential suspects was long, and it was only later that the name of his own brother, Cesare, was added to that list. Giovanni had been the one chosen by their father to be the founder of a dynasty, while Cesare was to follow the ecclesiastical career, something he was not very keen on. In any case, the Pope called off the investigation suspiciously quickly. Lucrezia's renowned beauty was in full bloom, and she was free for a new marriage. This time, not to an older man, but a slightly younger man, and by most accounts, just as hot as she was. The young man in question was Alfonso d'Aragona, Duke of Biceglie, an illegitimate son of the King of Naples. Incidentally, Biceglie is a nice little town in the northern part of the very long region of Puglia, which I very highly recommend for a holiday. We went there and stayed in one of the characteristic trulli, a rounded low white stone building that looks a bit like a gnome's house. I accidentally left with the key, come to think of it, so if they haven't changed the locks, if I can get past security, and if there's no one staying there, and most of all if I can remember where it is, I suppose I could go back and stay there for free. If there was one thing about this marriage that was different from the first, it was the fact that the young people were mad about each other. They were totes in love and living up the life of a young, hottie couple in Rome. They soon consumed the marriage, and young Rodrigo was born. This happy news for the couple also meant that, if shifting alliance were to make also this match less convenient, the Borgias could not play the same trick of the annulment. Shifting alliances made the match less convenient. Pope Alexander and his son Cesare, now free of the constraints of religious life, saw great advantage in moving towards a pro-French alliance with the new king Louis XII that could help Cesare carve out a duchy for himself in central Italy. He had also gained land interest in France and was now the Duke of Valentinois, or Valentino, as he was known in Italian. Lucrezia's Neapolitan husband was in the way. In August of 1500, he was attacked in the streets of Rome and seriously wounded, allegedly by Cesare Borgia's men. He did not die, however, and was nursed back to health by his wife Lucrezia and his sister Sancha, wife of another Borgia, Geoffrey. They watched over him day and night. The story goes that at this point they were lured away by Lucrezia's father, the Pope, which is when Cesare's trusted assassin, Michelotto, moved in to finish off poor Alphonse by strangling him. Lucrezia, who had truly loved her husband, was devastated, crying uncontrollably for days. It was probably at this point that she decided that her future lay away from Rome and the dark shadow of her father and brother. She continued to be close to her family, believing the version according to which Alfonso had been involved in a plot to assassinate Cesare. But, from then on, she would make every effort to distance herself. It was in this period but also while her husband had been alive, that she showed her knack for good administration, being assigned the governorship of Spoleto and Sfoligno, as well as the important castles of Nepi and Civita Castellana, whose territory she expanded, negotiating the purchase of Sarmoneta and then overseeing the revision of the statute of the new acquisition. When her father then went on a long voyage, it was Lucrezia that he entrusted with the governance of the Papal States. This did not please the conclave of cardinals, but it did impress her future third husband, another Alfonso, son of Ercole d'Este, Duke of Ferrara. Lucrezia saw this third marriage as her way out, out from under the control of her father and brother and the long shadow of the Borgia name. She put all her energy into convincing the Este that she was a good catch. They were a bit hesitant, having seen what had happened to her first two husbands, the changing loyalties of her family, and the reputation she had acquired. Plus, it was a question of marrying off the legitimate heir to the duchy to a bastard daughter of a pope. In the end, she managed, also because the Este, although not one of the major players in Italy, were no pushover and had managed to survive with their little duchy among greedy neighbours, such as the Papal States, the Duchy of Milan, and the Republic of Venice, which had tried to take the duchy less than two decades before. So it was that in 1502, Lucrezia Borgia left her family home for good to become the Duchess of Ferrara. She was well loved by the people of Ferrara from the very moment she arrived. For example, this is how one of the courtiers described her. "Of beautiful face and lively, happy eyes. She's wise, careful, happy, pleasant, and kind." With regard to her kindness, the Chronicle of Ferrara tells us that in difficult times for her subjects, the Duchess would dress in black and go from house to house, listening to the problems of her people. When her husband Alfonso became duke in full with the death of his father, Ercole, he would often place the government of the duchy in her hands, as he was a great lover of going off to fight, especially with artillery. As well as being good with public admin, she was also a good businesswoman, managing to double her income in a short time. She set up a new system of land management in which she would rent out land, sharing both costs of drainage and profits with her tenants. She invested in dairy farming, setting up quite a successful cheese industry. She did not neglect the arts. After all, we are still talking about the Renaissance. Indeed, she collected a whole series of painters and writers, including Lodovico Ariosto and Pietro Bembo, with whom she had a deep relationship of what seems to have been purely platonic love. The letters between the two were so passionate that they made a lasting impression on the English poet Lord Byron, who even went so far as to steal a lock of Lucrezia's hair from one of the letters. Another relationship seems to have been a little less platonic, that with the Duke of Mantua, Francesco Gonzaga. Aside from the fact that Lucrezia was married, the other problem was that Francesco also had a wife, the formidable Isabella d'Este, one of the great women and for some perhaps the greatest woman of the Italian Renaissance. The rivalry between these two women would have made a perfect film, perhaps one with Julia Roberts or something. At least it was made into a book, Le Nemiche, The Enemies by Carla Maria Russo. Isabella d'Este was jealous of the youth and beauty of Lucrezia, and of course there was the husband business which didn't help, while Lucrezia suffered from an inferiority complex towards the slightly older woman. In 1503, Lucrezia received the news of her father's death. She had done her utmost to get away from her family, but it did not mean that she did not love him. She was deeply saddened, but by now she was no longer Lucrezia Borgia, daughter of the Pope, but the Duchess of Ferrara. She also tried to help her brother Cesare now that he had lost the support of his father and had to deal with the hostile Pope Julius II. Indeed, it was she who sent troops from Ferrara, managing to help Cesare hold the cities of Cesena and Imola, prolonging the almost inevitable end, which, when it came, was another source of deep suffering for Lucrezia. In her time as Duchess, Lucrezia was pregnant 16 times. Of these, 4 children survived beyond their teenage years. In 1519, Lucrezia was pregnant again. After giving birth to her daughter, Isabella Maria, she took to her bed with a fever and died soon after, at the age of 39. Thank you very much for listening. Remember that A History of Italy podcast is a production of Sentire Media, created and hosted by me, Mike Corradi, produced by my wonderful Patreon supporters, without whom all of this would not be possible. Follow A History of Italy wherever you get your podcasts and have a look at our website, ahistoryofitaly.com, where you can click through to the support page and become a Patreon supporter with access to ad-free episodes and extra content. There you can also find my voice map audio tours of Italian cities. Don't forget, if you love this episode or just found it tolerable, please leave a 5-star rating and review. It would be much appreciated. Once again, thank you very much for listening, and until next time, arrivederci.
Sentire Media.
Hey, podcast producers and show hosts. Do you want to join a podcast network that celebrates all things Italian? At Sentire Media, we understand the allure of Italy and its unique culture. Our devoted team of hosts and producers are all driven by their shared passion for Italy. And we work tirelessly to create the best lifestyle podcasts and content that will whisk you away to the very heart of Italy. With us, you can savor the mouth-watering flavors, get lost in the stories from the past, break down the cultural barriers, and truly immerse yourself in the vibrant traditions of this intoxicating country. If you have a great podcast idea or are already in production and would like to join Sentire Media, head over to sentiremedia.com, that's sentiremedia.com, and find out how to submit your show.